Redbeard's Outfitter is a Mobile, Alabama-based outfitter offering a carefully curated selection of gear and apparel, outfitting you for your next adventure, exploring our world, and building community. We love this local store, and we love supporting folks like them who are building community in the outdoor space. Plus, they have some spectacular apparel for Alabamians and all the gear anyone would need to be ready to enjoy the outdoors. Use promo code TSO for a 20% discount online or visit them in store. Visit redbeardsoutfitter.com for more information. This is The Storied Outdoors, a podcast somewhere between Lewis and Tolkien and Lewis and Clark, finding clarity in the stories we tell and the adventures that shape us. Welcome to The Storied Outdoors. My name is Brad Hill, and man, I'm joined by my pal Brian Gill up in Birmingham, and I'm down in Mobile, and we are joined today. Man, we're so excited to talk to somebody new and somebody that does something different that I have never done or even attempted to do or thought about attempting to do. But we're excited to hear about it today from Jacob Holsenbach. Grew up in Pace, Florida. Grew up with a good pal of mine, Ryan Perazine. Some of you that listen may know Ryan, but Ryan's a dear friend of mine, and that's how we found out about Jacob. And he's one of the managers at Interlight Surf Shop in Pensacola, Florida. They have four locations, two in Pensacola, one in Gulf Breeze, and one in Destin, Florida. And when summertime hits and rolls around, Jacob is not only at the surf shop, but he also runs a surf camp that's put on by the shop, which sounds really cool. And so, man, we're just, you love surfing, and that's fascinating to me. And man, it's not something I've ever done or really know anything about. So I'm here. We're here to learn. We're here to learn and hear from you and hear about your story. Jacob, man, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I know it's kind of been a little while in the works getting me on here. I remember my brother-in-law, Brett Glover, mentioned it to you, and I was super interested. And so I've been looking forward to it for a while now.
That's right, man. I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah. Right on time. Welcome. And you know, when I hear somebody say Pace, Florida, my ears perk up. My family's from Brewton, Alabama. Okay. So you know, we're right across the line from you guys, and just a lot of good memories down there.
Yeah. Funny you say that. My family is from Atmore.
Oh yeah, great.
Yeah, so I've been through Brewton several times in my life. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's funny. So funny, we had Sean Diedrich on here, and he said everybody's been through Brewton and knows somebody from Brewton at some point in their life.
Yeah, yep. That's so true, man.
I'd be willing to bet your family knows some of mine for sure.
We could play that game for a long time, I bet.
Yeah, I need to call my grandma, and he can talk shop with her.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, man, so, you know, when you think about surfing, the Gulf Coast is not really the first thing that comes to mind, honestly, in my opinion. It's not as known for the waves because, you know, they're bigger in other parts of the world. So, like, how did you find your way into surfing? What drew you into that?
So, you are correct. I don't think that when people think of surfing in Florida, the panhandle is not their first thought. I think people would probably definitely assume or associate that with more of the East Coast for sure. And like the East Coast gets really, really good. And it's more consistent than here. But when the Gulf is on, like it can be a very sought after spot. You just kind of have, our windows are much smaller. Mm-hmm. But as far as like how I got into it, previously, like what Brad mentioned, my best friend growing up is Ryan Perazine. And he was on staff with Brad at Mars Hill, and he now is the lead pastor at a church in downtown Mobile. And so I believe his mom is the one that started like that whole group in surfing or whatever, because it was Ryan and a bunch of neighborhood guys, and they just kind of caught the bug. And for whatever reason, I never got the invite. You know, me and Ryan were always good friends, but I had a neighborhood crew that I hung out with a lot, and me and Ryan played sports together, went to school together. And so it's not like we didn't talk, but I just never got the invite for whatever reason. I don't know. But
sounds like something deeper need to talk about there.
get him on here, right? But I went with two guys that mutual friends of mine and Ryan's in high school. And once I did that, it was kind of like you kind of walk into a whole new world, you know, like all of our close friends grew up surfing. Like I said, I was just kind of out of the picture for some reason, but a lot of mutual friends surfed. And so, yeah, I mean, you kind of just get the bug and you don't really look back, but I didn't dive into it really until I was in college. I'm pretty late bloomer. If you really like sit back and look at the timeline of everything, I kind of wish I could go back and change a few things, but yeah, kind of late, but I'm pretty invested right now.
Just to kind of follow up on that a little bit, surfing along the Florida Panhandle, is that a new phenomenon? Is that you know, comparatively speaking to the, you know, the West Coast?
No, so the shop I work at, Interlight, is actually over 50 years old.
How about that? Okay.
Yeah, so the guy that founded it, his name was Yancey Spencer. He started it in Gulf Breeze, Florida, so right over the bridge from where I'm at right now in Pensacola. So we've had a very heavy footprint in the surf community here along the Gulf Coast. And then there are now three other shops that are thriving. You know, all three of us do really well. It's us, Water Boys, and Maverick. They're all in the Pensacola and Gulf Breeze area as well. And so there's definitely some roots in the surf scene out here on the Gulf. It's just, we just fly under the radar because it's so inconsistent here. Hmm.
Nothing like a good hurricane, I'm sure, to get you stirred up, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's, that's a tough one, you know, like I mean, anybody sure that's grown up on the Gulf, you know, like in the area, it is, you don't wish a storm on anybody. You know, those things are absolute worst. You know, I really have a, like, my mom's house flooded during Hurricane Sally. And so, like, I've got a very bitter taste during hurricane season, you know, like that's just not something that's fun to deal with. But when the opportunity arises and you have a window, like, you gotta go, like, you know.
That's right.
But it doesn't mean I want one coming down our throat, you know, like I'd much rather have a hurricane season that has no storms coming in the Gulf.
Yeah.
For sure. No,
absolutely. Yeah, surfing seems to have its roots in sort of a pure form of enjoyment, you know, just like it's like asking somebody to, you know, say, what's the point of candy? Right. There's no point. It's enjoyment. It's fun. Is that off base or is there something more to it?
No, I think that it's one of the funnest activities that you could ever try. You know, I don't think that it's limited to gender. I think both males and females can be very, very successful in it. I think all different heights, body types, you know, like there's no restriction on it, you know, but I think the core of it is fun. I hope that a lot of people would be in agreement with that, you know, because that's ultimately like what makes you want to do any hobby, you know. It's fun, you know, and it kind of keeps things like in perspective. But I mean, there's probably some people that do have some deeper like values within it. But yeah, I mean, sure. It's so fun. Like there's nothing like it. You can't really describe it.
I've seen a dog do it before.
Go viral.
They look like they're having a good time.
I love those pictures of those guys on those longboards. You know, it's like basically like a big paddle board, and they got their dog on the front of it and just loving life, man. It's incredible.
Yeah. I've never seen that. You know, I know those videos just take off. You know, it's kind of like you kind of want to try it just to see if you can make some cash, right?
Oh, man. The closest I've ever been to surfing is wake surfing, you know, behind a boat. And, you know, and the only, you know, I let go of the rope, but it was as I was falling. So it's not like I'm a good at this type of sport. But I mean, just being up there and being kind of pushed by the wave and propelled, that's a weird feeling where you're kind of in control, but you're really not in control, or you're kind of just right. You're going with it. How would you describe that sensation of surfing to someone who's never done it before?
Well, I think it's one of the most addicting things that, like, you could ever have. I think I've read, like, some studies that, like, it's something to do with, like, the chemicals that, like, happen in your mind or something like that are triggered that are also involved with, like, other things that would be addictive. Like, I've personally never done drugs. I swear, I've never touched any of those. But, like, I've heard stories about how addicting a certain drug can be, and, like, you just can't leave it alone. It's the only thing that, you know, is kind of getting you through your day. And it can be the most addicting thing ever when, like, you figure out just when to paddle, when to pop up, and now you're riding the wave. And then once you progress from there and you start connecting the dots, like, oh, now I can go right, or I can go left, and I can do this and do that. You know, it's just like everything's just kind of like evolving from there, and you just don't want to give it up because, like, for me, like, surfing is fun. Like, back to what Brad was saying, like, the root of it is very fun. I thoroughly enjoy it. But progression is something that really drives me too. You know, like, I really want to progress in certain areas. And so, like, it's like an abyss. You know, like, you can't really just describe it without feeling it. You know, it's almost like you're floating.
Yeah.
You know, and like you're able to control the way you're going too. Kind of like, what's that Disney movie with the magic carpet?
Yeah.
Aladdin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like you're on a magic carpet.
That makes sense. I mean, that visually makes sense. I think the closest thing I would imagine from someone who doesn't know zero about surfing, other than a good old body surf, I mean, anybody's that's a kid that's gone to the beach, we've all caught a wave and body surfed right into the sand, you know. And so that's as close as I've come to surfing. But it makes me think about balancing on a bicycle, which I've spent an awful lot of time on a bicycle. And so I think there's a similarity that's there of, you know, downhilling on a road bike. You know, you get... And what you're talking about earlier, I would imagine, is the dopamine hit that you get.
Yeah. Dopamine.
From, you know, from this sort of the pleasure gland of your, you know, brain's just pumping out dopamine.
Yeah.
You know, and it's you're getting that hit, and, man, you just want some more of that, you know.
Big time.
And so it makes you come back over and over again. And I think it would be close to riding a bike. You know, there's balance involved. There's speed involved, there's wind involved, and there's, you know, I've written about road cycling before and riding a bike, you know, when you're a kid, there's, you know, there's physics to it, yes, but it also kind of feels magical, you know, and there's a fine line between magic and science sometimes, and riding a bike feels like that. I would imagine that getting up on a, you know, especially a sizable wave that would normally, and here's the unique thing to me that I think would normally be terrifying. Right, the waves are scary, you know, if you're on the receiving end of them, because they can crush you if they're really large, and really hurt you. But when you're riding on something like that, I can see where that would be awfully exhilarating, because there is this potential for danger, but then there's also the fun being had by those that ride on the waves.
Yeah, big time adrenaline rush for sure, and like even when, especially when it's big, it's like. Like, I'm sure you guys have heard, like, athletes talk about, like, when they're in a high-pressure situation, everything just kind of, like, slows down, and they don't hear anything, you know? They're just so locked in that, like, nothing can go wrong, you know? And so, like, when you're on – or when you're surfing and the surf is big, you know, it's kind of like you kind of just go into a different gear than when it's smaller, you know, because you kind of have to be more on top of your game, because the last thing you want is to get pounded out there, you know what I mean? And getting held down isn't fun, and so you want to try to avoid that. And if you're surfing over like a rock or a reef, you know, that's a whole different
sharp, super sharp,
and surfing over, like, and, you know, so yeah, it's the adrenaline is huge. That's probably why people keep coming back.
I would imagine it's like people that skydive, you know, it's like, why are you going to jump out of a perfectly good airplane?
Right. It's like, why can't we go somewhere cool?
So there was this, I was talking to this guy the other day at Sanford, and he was talking about this whole concept of flow. And it's like whenever you do something really hard, that you're able to kind of overcome or achieve, and then you kind of get into this rhythm, and it's like it gives you this confidence, and that you're really it's called flow. And it's like I feel like that's kind of what you maybe are alluding to. It's like this you hit this huge wave and you're doing it right, and you just kind of, it's almost like you can't do any wrong in the, you right. know, it's just like your body is reacting and you're in the flow. And I love the thought of that, and kind of this idea of, I mean, literally going with the flow. I mean, it kind of seems like the culture as well as the experience.
Yeah. It's like, I wouldn't say that I'm like an exceptional surfer, so I don't know if I could say I've achieved that flow state where it's like you're not doing anything wrong, you know, but I've definitely had my fair share of getting smoked out there. But like, it's just cool to, like when the wind is good, or like the crowd's not very, like it's not busy out there, you know, like the crowd's pretty thin and you're having a good time, but like if the surf can still be big and you can still kind of lock in and like kind of do what you're trying to accomplish, you know, it's really cool to like sit back and think about like what your mind's doing and how your body is reacting to it. You know, it's kind of mind blowing when you really think about it.
To me, as we're talking, it makes me think about, it feels like you're, I don't want to say taming, but it feels like you're, it is something that's much, much larger than you, much more powerful than you. Okay. And it's like you're cheating a little bit by riding on top of it, you know, because it doesn't care that you're there. Like, it's ambivalent, right? But man, it will crush you if you're beneath it. And it's like you've borrowed something you're probably not supposed to borrow, almost, you know, but it's like, well, that's part of what makes it fun. Because, you know, there's nothing quite like being out in the ocean that makes you feel small.
Big time. You know, and like when you sent me, when we were talking, and like you're like, I think something that gets brought up a lot, like especially if you talk to somebody that goes to church, you know, and or that has like a faith background, you know, like I've never felt any smaller than being out in the water, you know, and like that's whether you're on a surf trip or you're surfing at home, you know, and like when the surf's big, especially, it's kind of like when you really feel that way, it's like, man, like there's like, who am I to think that I'm truly in control, you know what I mean? Like it's crazy, you know, like to think that all that stuff is created by something that's a higher being, you know, and that higher being still loves and cares about every single one of us, you know.
Wow.
I remember.
Well said.
I remember distinctly during Ironman Florida in Panama City, during the swim portion, which is in the Gulf, you know, it was in the morning, you know, it was early morning start, and you know, we're a half mile offshore. We go a half mile offshore and we would swim south and then come back in the other half mile. We did that two times, so it was a 2.4 mile swim. But you're a half mile offshore, and man, I felt so tiny out there in that water. The swells were large. They were over our heads. It was in November. And so they were over our heads. So we had to dolphin through them to get out into the water to be able to swim. And then we had to sight, if you ever do any open water swimming, which you would probably understand, like trying to go somewhere straight, you got to pop up and see where you're going, make sure you're swimming straight. Mm-hmm. And I would have to do that at the top of the swell, because if I did it at the bottom, I couldn't see anything but a wall of water.
Yeah.
And, you know, man, it was scary and wild, and it was amazing, but it was terrifying because, man, every time I put my face in that water, I just... You know, I would see jellyfish, or I would see other kinds of fish beneath me, and I kept waiting on Jaws to come up. And just, I mean, all my buddies leading up to it too. Several of my friends were very kind to send me, you know, articles about how guys had caught sharks off of the, you know, off the beach down there. And here I am fixing to go swim in the Gulf for 2.5 miles.
it's a very humbling feeling being in
really
the water.
It really is. Because like, you're the bottom of the food chain. You're not in charge. You are mere visitor.
You're a land animal.
And yeah. Like, even think about like the Gulf being as small as it is, you know.
Right.
Like when like you look at it on the map, like, oh, the Gulf's huge, but then you look over and it's like, oh, there's the Atlantic. It's like,
the Atlantic,
giant,
exactly.
You know? And so like you can be in the water and you just look out and you can just look as far as you can see and not see anything but water.
Hmm. Tiny. Just a speck.
Very humbling, for sure.
Indeed. What is, you work in a surf shop and you spend a lot of time around, you know, folks that would call themselves surfers. I think that Ryan was the first person that I met that would have called himself, you know, somebody who surfs, a surfer.
Yeah.
You know, that like has a surfboard, you know, not a boogie board, but it's like a real surfboard, and would go actually chase waves. You know, I remember them watching they would have their apps open and they would be looking at the weather. I'm looking at the weather going, is the wind blowing so too hard to fish?
Right.
They were going, what direction is the wind blowing? Is it making good waves?
Yep.
And they would, you know, they would be going. So I'd never experienced that until Ryan. So that was new for me, but I got a little bit of the sense of what that community was like from Ryan, but what is that like surfing community like?
I mean, I kind of feel like it would be like any other sport, you know, like I kind of think about it with basketball, for example. So, I mean, you think about like, let's say Rucker Park in New York, like one of the most famous streetball basketball courts in the history of the United States, you know? Like, you've got guys there that, like, are solid basketball players. And if I'm going to go up there, like, I'm not going to get to just go run with, like, these guys that, like this is their neighborhood. This is, like, this is their court. You know what I mean? You kind of have to work your way into that, you know, and show that, like, hey, like, all right, he can play. You know, like, he can play if he really wants to. We need an extra guy, like bring him in, you know? And then like, as you like show like your consistency, show that you can actually hang, you know, you kind of just work into that whole group of guys that can actually like hold it down at Rucker Park, you know? And that's kind of how it is here. I feel like it's a very unique community. I feel like the surf scene is, you know, you have guys that might be surfing this home break for they've been there their whole life, you know, and like they always tell stories about, oh, it used to be like this, or this year we had the best sandbars, blah blah blah, you know, like just kind of like they put their time in, they deserve the respect, you know. And then you've got guys that just bought a board 2 days ago at the shop, you know, and they're gonna go paddle out and hope to have this like great experience, but then they get out there and it's like, whoa, this is really crowded. These guys can actually surf, you know, it can be really intimidating. And then you got guys that like are new in town, you know, like around here we have a lot of military personnel coming through, you know, with all the bases and stuff in the area. And so it like they have to work their way in just like somebody else does. And so it's super unique here. I think that there are more friendly faces than non-friendly faces. But I do think that you kind of have to like work your way in and be respectful out in the water, you know, to kind of like get there, if that makes sense.
Sure.
You know,
I'm having visions of Point Break. I'm going to be real honest. Cards on the table.
Okay.
I'm having visions of Point Break and like, man, they were fighting over waves. And so like is there some of that real competitive like spirit of that, or is that just like cinema, you know, cinema like hyping things up a little bit?
When the surf's good, it can be very competitive. And I don't,
oh, really?
And like, I'm not trying to make Pensacola sound like it's North Shore of Hawaii. Like,
sure.
like we are a very small drop in the world of surf, you know, and like there's people in Hawaii and like Australia and like these places that get incredible waves, and like there's an actual like pecking order. Here, it's not so much like that. I think a lot of people would probably agree with me saying that we wish that there was a little more order out there, you know. But when the waves are good, it can be very, very competitive. And like anywhere in the world, if there's a pier, that's normally where the better surfers surf, you know. And it's kind of like the sand builds up a little bit quicker there than other spots because of the pilings.
Oh, yeah.
And right, so that like that sandbar can be better there than other places along down the beach, you know, and so all the better guys are going to go surf there. And that can just be a whole mixture of age and ability level, but everybody's fighting for a wave. And especially here with it being so inconsistent, like everybody's just out for blood sometimes. It's like, man, we haven't surfed in a month and a half. Like we're all like just like
it's been totally flat out.
Yeah. And so like as soon as there's a rideable wave, it's like it's kind of game on after that. But I don't think it's the worst surf community in the world.
Yeah. would you say so I'm assuming that the answer is going to be one of these three, but like surfing in Pensacola versus surfing out in California, is one easier or are they different? Because I know that, I mean, when I'm seeing guys surfing in like lower waves, it's like a lot of work. It's like a lot of pumping. And like, I mean, they're really working a lot harder, it seems like, than just like hitting a curl and just going. So right. I mean, is there a difference? Is it easier, harder with a short, like a smaller wave? Or I mean, what's the difference in the, you know, Gulf Coast and West Coast?
So for one, and I think the biggest reason is with the Gulf being so small and the way Florida and Central America are shaped, you know, it kind of makes like a U almost. Mm-hmm. And so when we get swell here, it's mainly wind driven. And so that's why you can always see, like, there's always some type of chop on the water more times than not. At any point of the day, any time of year, the wind is what's creating our waves more times than not. Now, if you have a hurricane swell, that's like, you know, the Yucatan Peninsula down there, the gap. So if there's a storm that kind of goes through the bottom of the Gulf, like going towards Mexico, for example,
it's pulling all that water.
Right. So it's going to send us what we would call long period swell towards the whole Gulf Coast region. And so that would make that kind of wind wave factor almost disappear to a degree because you're getting the power of the storm sending waves.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to the West Coast, they almost always have some type of long period swell out there. Wow. And so in my mind, like I've been to the West Coast twice. I'm going back out there in 11 days. There's always like, there's just always swell in the water, you know, because there's so much open ocean and there's always a storm somewhere out there that's sending swell. And so it can be, I think it's a lot easier to learn in a place where you have consistency because the only way to master something is to truly like put in hours and hours and hours into it.
Yeah.
But I do think if you were to learn to surf here on the Gulf Coast in the summertime, like when we do surf camp, it can be a prime place to learn because the waves are small, they're weak. You're not surfing over rocks. You're not surfing over a reef.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really pretty water. You know, it's normally crystal clear.
Quite as intimidating.
Right. The intimidation factor is gone. And so it goes both ways, I feel like. But ultimately, I feel like it can be a lot easier to surf not on the Gulf.
Yeah, I can kind of get that. I mean, and this is going to fail in so many levels, but like I learned to snow ski in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And then I go out to Big Sky, Montana, and it's a totally different experience. I mean, you're snow skiing on spring break in West Virginia on slush and you're dodging mud puddles, you know, but you're going out to, you know, Big Sky and you're hitting some really good powder and it's just It's a little bit easier in some ways, but then you have the really intense bowl there, and it's just this, the mountains are so much bigger out there. And so like I think I can kind of see what you're saying. Like the consistency of the conditions maybe make it a little bit easier out west, but then like also you got this whole intimidation factor. It's more approachable, it's doable over here in the Gulf. I like that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, and two, on the West Coast, it's like it's so crowded out there.
Oh, okay. Like,
there are so many surfers in California. It's insane. And so if I feel like the mentality for a lot of beginners is nobody wants to look dumb at anything. you know, whether it be ping pong or surfing or whatever. You know, nobody wants to be made fun of. Nobody wants to be embarrassed. And so when you go to a place like California where the level of surfing is exponentially higher than anywhere in Florida, you know, and a lot of places on the East Coast, it's like, man, I don't want to paddle out there. Like, those guys are doing airs over people. Like, I don't want no part of that, you know? And so that can be very, very intimidating.
Tell us about, you mentioned earlier, you mentioned the surf shop, Interlight.
Yep.
I like that name. Where did that name come from? That's really cool.
So, like I said, our founder was Yancey Spencer III, and he did not grow up in the church, but he did come to know Christ in his, I think it was his mid-20s, somewhere in that timeline for him. But when the shop started, that's what he wanted to call it because he had become a Christian at that point. And so, I mean, like anybody that has grown up in church or in, like, they always talk about let your light shine, you know, and so that's kind of where it came from, you know, like let your inner light for Jesus kind of be, you know, what people see more than anything. Mm. And so that's where the name comes from. But Yancey, he passed away in 2011. He was out in California and he was visiting his daughter and he had a heart attack on the beach surfing one of his favorite places out there called County Line. And so he was the owner, and then his younger brother, whose name was JB, he was our general manager at the time. And so when Yancey passed, ownership was split between his wife Lydia and his younger brother JB. And so JB is still very much in the picture. Lydia is too, but she's not as involved within the shop day-to-day operations as JB is. And so it's still very, very much in the family, though. Both of JB's daughters play a vital role for us. One of his daughters is our women's buyer. So if you're to come into Interlight and you looked for your wives, like some type of clothing on the women's side of things or a certain brand of shoes that she orders, you know, she's the one that orders all that for all of our shops. And then cool. his other daughter is our operations manager. So she does a lot of our behind the scenes stuff. Like we would sink without her. Like she carries so much weight, you know, like she really does a great job for us. And his son was a manager for us for several years. Three of his grandchildren worked for us. And so very, very family oriented at the shop.
That's cool. I love that. That picture of, you know, letting the light that's in you shine to those around you. Man, I like that a lot.
Yeah. It's a good place to work. Like, I'm very, very fortunate. You know, I've been there for 9 years this summer.
Wow.
I don't mind going to work. You know, I enjoy the people I work with. Like, we've got full-time people. We've got part-time people, you know, and, like, throughout the year, and throughout the years, you know, like we do have a turnover rate just like any other job would. You know, I feel like a lot of people in the college age and high school age kind of use it just like a stepping stone part-time job type deal. But like the core group of employees that have been there for a while, you know, like man, those, like, you can't beat working small business, you know. Mm. Like there's just something about it. It's different. Good place to be.
That, I love that. Say somebody comes in there and they buy a board and they're just trying to get started. What is the one piece of advice that you give them?
To buy a bigger board than what you're probably thinking you need.
Why is that? Yeah.
You got a 16 foot, about 8 feet wide for me.
Yeah. No, we can make it happen for you. I know we could. I'm a firm believer that anybody can surf on the right board on the right conditions. So like I guarantee you we could get you up. But to answer your question, I feel like all the surf videos that people see, they're riding like a normal shortboard, so like a real pointy nose, and it's probably like 6 foot or shorter.
Oh yeah.
And they're doing airs or doing turns, you know, like they're
like
surfing
a skateboarder.
Yeah, probably surfing somewhere really tropical, you know, like a desired place to be. But in reality, that board is not meant for a beginner. You know, that board is meant for, number one, a wave with a little power behind it, little size. And that person that's doing all those things on that board has probably been surfing for at least 10 years. You know, like they they put a lot of time into it, and they probably surfed in a place that allows them to get in the water like 300 days a year, you know, or they have the ability to travel. And so when you have a longer board, it just makes the whole learning process much easier. So normally, like, the general rule of thumb is you would ride a long board in smaller surf conditions. And then as the surf gets bigger, your board size can drop because you're no longer having to depend on, like, the power of the wave is giving you the ability to ride a lesser board, if that makes sense. Because, like, you don't need as much float. You know, does am I making any sense with that?
Yeah,
no, that makes perfect
sense. Okay. And so as a beginner, like, you wouldn't go out there when it's like a hurricane swell, for example. You know, like, that's how people get hurt, you know.
Yes.
And so when you have a longboard, you're probably going to be surfing on days where it's like knee to thigh high, light winds, you know, and you're able to just build a good solid foundation on something that's stable. It's going to paddle really well. You're going to catch waves so much easier and sooner than somebody on a small board would. And then once you're up and on your feet, it's going to be very predictable. It's not going to do anything that you don't want it to do. And so that's kind of like, that's my approach, you know. And I feel like a lot of people at the shop or that work at surf shops all over would probably agree with that, you know.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, and the fact that you know how to guide people in that, I mean, that just shows the kind of services that a small business really provides. You know, you know the water, you know the ins and outs of everything to be able to advise people like that. I love that. You know, I've got so many questions, Brad, and I know I'm going a little bit off script. But it's, you know, one of the questions that I kind of been thinking about since we've been talking. What do you see as one of the main threats for the sport?
I've heard, so I'm like the biggest surf junkie. Like, gosh, like, you have no idea how much time I've spent on this computer watching surf videos and reading articles. Like, holy moly. Like, I sit back and I'm like, dude, you could have been way more productive with your time. But anyway, like, I just eat it up. I love it. But I've heard that, and like through podcast, other surf podcasts that I listen to and articles I've read, that the art of glassing a board is kind of becoming less and less a desirable thing. So, like, when you have a surfboard, when you're shaping a surfboard, it's foam, you know, you shape it to the length and the dimensions that you're desiring.
Mm-hmm.
And after you shape it, you glass it. And so that's what makes it hard.
You're putting I'm guessing that's fiberglass. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. And the cloth and everything like that. And then once it hardens, that gives you your surfboard, essentially. And so when you buy a surfboard, you can either get one that's hand-shaped. So, like, I've got a board behind me, my longboard, and a couple up against my wall over here that have been hand-shaped. So a guy has shaped it himself. There hasn't been any machine, like, computer work done to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, they glass it. And so the glassing is super important. Like, anybody can learn how to shape, but glassing is really a whole nother world in itself. And so in a podcast I listened to with a shaper out of Southern California, he says that it seems like that there's just not a whole lot of desire to learn that part of the thing, the process. And so if you think about it, like, if you don't have an adequate amount of glassers, you know, like, what happens to all your surfboards?
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't really get them, you know? And then obviously, like, I mean, I'm sure you guys have your own experiences just like anybody else does, but, like, nothing's cheap right now, you know? Yeah. And so, like shipping costs and then just the cost to actually, like, build a board, you know, and labor costs, like, it's all pretty high right now. But, like, I don't think we're in danger of losing it, but I do kind of worry about, like, how many sustainability. People, yeah, like how long people want to continue to learn to just like just grind out a bunch of boards and mow foam and then glass and then kind of just like do it the old school way, you know, because there's a lot of guys, a lot of shapers that are able to do it with a computer now. Like there's a whole system that you can just plug and play essentially, and then it will cut the board out and then it's kind of ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you put it in like a CNC like machine.
And yeah, exactly.
It just cuts it out for you. I mean, right. It loses a little bit of that creator's touch to it.
Right.
The artisan side of, you know, I can imagine, you know, the fiberglass and glue and all that is not a very glamorous process, and it's pretty difficult if I'm imagining correctly.
and I would agree with that. Like, I've never personally shaped a board. I watched more videos than I can count on just like kind of like maybe not necessarily the whole process from start to finish, but there's always like snippets of each part within the video, you know, and like, I mean, you're on your feet a lot. You're hopefully wearing a mask so you're not inhaling all those chemicals and stuff like that. Oof. But it's not like you're just like digging a ditch all day, but like it is like not the most glamorous part.
Grueling. Could be grueling, I would imagine.
Right. And like you probably wouldn't get the credit. Like if you were a guy that wins the world title, and like if you're a professional surfer and you win the whole, all the events and everything, like the shaper is who's going to get the credit, you know, because you're riding his boards, you know, and then he would probably give credit to the rest of his team that's doing the glassing and all that type of stuff. But it's not as glamorous as the person that shapes a board and has their own label and like this is why you want to buy so and so's board. You know, you're not really talking about the glassing.
Mm. Man, I know that you said 11 days from now you're going to be going out west. What's your favorite place that you've been and had the opportunity to surf?
So I've been to the San Diego area twice, and that's where I'm going back on the 23rd. I'm flying out. I'll be there for a week. I mean, the West Coast is just so fun. It's easy. You know, you don't have to have a passport to get there.
Yep.
Everybody speaks English. Coffee's good. The burritos are out of this world. Like, who wouldn't want to go to California? You know, like, like I love it out there. Like, I don't want to live there by any means. You know, it's just so fast paced out there. And like I'm definitely a guy it's like right, like 5-6 o'clock, like the roads start slowing down, you can get wherever you need to go, no issues. But out there it's just a different ball game. And so I'll be staying in Oceanside with a husband and wife and their little girl that I'm friends with. They're from here. They have connections to the shop as well, and so I'll be staying out there and kind of just surfing like wherever. There's so many waves in Southern California, you can kind of just go wherever you want, you know. And like the way that they surf forecast now, you can get pretty detailed information before you even step foot in your car. You know, you can kind of have a general idea of where you're going to go look and surf. And so like it's still a few days out, so like I've been looking at the forecast and like I don't know exactly where I'll surf, but it will probably be close to Oceanside a lot. Like I've caught really fun waves at Oceanside Pier and Oceanside Harbor. Mm-hmm. Super fun right there.
Sounds beautiful.
I've been to Dana Point twice.
And, okay, great surf spot.
Yeah, I mean it was fun just watching the, you know, guys and girls out there surfing. Man, it's just mesmerizing. I mean, just watching people hitting these with different waves. I mean, I could do that all day just sitting there on the beach watching.
Yeah, yeah, that is the culture out there. You know, like everybody you run into as a surfer, and it even works, like you're always in the water, you know, like what's the deal?
Jacob, I don't know if Ryan told you, but one time I took him down to, on a mission trip down to Nicaragua, and he was foaming at the mouth for an opportunity to get over to the coast and surf when we were in Nicaragua. And as we were flying in there, we were at baggage, you know, picking up our baggage, and there were a handful of people that here come their surfboards, and man, he's like, man, I wish I could. I want to go do that. I hear there's some pretty cool spots down there in Central America over there on the West Coast for surfing.
Yeah. So
our Nicaragua was really cheap. So
that's it is. And it's warm. Like if you want to go and get out of this, like it's not super cold today, but Like, we've had some pretty chilly days this winter. Right. And, yeah, if you're trying to get out of here and go surfing some board shorts, like, by all means.
Yeah.
Central America is great.
That's awesome. Well, there are some wonderful people down there. I can attest to that. I love going down there. I take a team down there a couple times a year.
I went down there on a mission trip as well.
That's awesome.
And my sister went. You know, Carrie, me and her both went. She went one summer, and I went the first time, and she went the second time. But we were in Los Cedros and Hinotega.
Cool. Yeah. There. I know where you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
My goal is to tack on a couple of days one year and go find some tarpon down there with my fly rod.
I was hoping you were going to say that. Did you ever watch River Monsters?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've watched it.
Did you see that episode where he was fishing for tarpon in the river in a self-propelled kayak?
Yes.
Insane.
Yeah. Those things look like dinosaurs.
I know. And he's just like, dude, what if there's an anaconda in there too? Like, get out of there.
He's been talking about being the bottom of the food chain. That guy is regularly on the bottom of the food chain.
That's my favorite episode of all time.
Mm. Yeah.
Love that one.
That's amazing. What, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the ins and outs and sort of teaching people and instructing people about surfing and the sport of surfing, because a lot of people are unfamiliar with it, but I would be curious to hear, you know, we hinted a little bit, you know, at a faith aspect of the, you know, the spiritual side of what you're doing out there. There's a lot of metaphor wrapped around the sport of surfing and the act of surfing. You spend that much time in the water and you've had a lot of experiences. What are some ways that time in and on the ocean has shaped you as a person?
I think it keeps you humble, for one. Like, you can be surfing really well, you know, and then surfing anywhere in the world, you just see so many different faces of whatever body of water you're surfing, you know, like no day is the same and no wave is the same. And so I think it's a very good humbling, like, I don't know the word, but activity, I guess, you know, just because you can be on your game, you know, and then you have a day where the Gulf is just doing whatever it wants and, like, you can't really put it together, you know, or you go out there when it's big and you're like, wow, like, I'm not as ready as I thought I was, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's just good to kind of be brought down a notch if you ever kind of get that big head, I feel like. So humbling for sure. I think... Like I grew up playing ball sports, you know, like Ryan did. And so, like I said, we've all played sports together growing up. But, like, I'm a very competitive person, you know. I think it shows itself in different forms. But to have something to be, like, as an adult, you know, like, if you're not playing a professional sport, you know, like I'm only 33, you know. And so, like there's guys older than me that are still playing in any professional league, you know, and to not have something as a competitor to kind of channel that, you know, after you get done playing whatever high school or college sport, you know, it's kind of good to just kind of get those juices flowing again, you know? And so that kind of keeps me really driven, you know, like Ryan won't agree with this. He doesn't think that he surfs very well because, like, he's just not able to go as much, you know. Like, I always applaud him for putting his family first, you know. Like, he's a husband, he's a dad of three, he cares about his church and his church family, you know. And so he does not push the envelope when it comes to breaking away to surf as much as he would maybe like, but I still think that he's a great surfer. And so when I surf,
Ryan is so humble, and he's humble. He would never say that. He's a genuinely humble dude, but that joker's a heck of an athlete.
He's
a great baseball player. He's a CrossFit monster. He's jacked.
He's a freak right now.
He's like, jacked.
I wouldn't mess with him for nothing right now.
No way. He's jacked, and he's just a genuinely good human being.
Yeah.
You know? And he's a great pastor, but you're right. He is full of humility, but man, anything that fellow puts his mind to, and it involves physicality and hand-eye coordination and balance, he's going to be good at it. That's just the way.
And so, like, like he doesn't think that he surfs as well as he used to, but in my mind, like I'm still thinking of Ryan and like in high school and then when we were in college, and it's like I'm still chasing him whenever he's in the water. It's like, if I see him do something, like I'm gonna try to do it, or I want to do something to make him be like, hey, that was really cool, like, or that was a good whatever, you know, like. Like, I'm seeking him to be like, hey, like, I'm kind of coming for you. Like, I really want to, like, pass you one day, you know?
That's cool.
Man, so, you know, we talk about this, you know, the bigness of the ocean and our smallness and things like that. Is there any stories that, you know, we talk about this podcast being a digital campfire, essentially, and where we tell stories, we kind of swap stories back and forth. Is there anything from your surfing background that has taught you something spiritually or opened your eyes to something deeper, maybe perhaps brought you a deeper understanding of God's, like, truth, beauty, and goodness in some way?
I think it, just being out in the water, you know, like no matter what the conditions are, is a very good example of that. Like we were touched on earlier, you know, just kind of feeling that you're as small as you are, you know, and like, who am I to like make things all about me when, you know, there is a God that's greater, you know? And like everybody always kind of compare, like does those, comparisons, like when you see a rainbow, you know, like whatever you're going through, you know, like it's kind of like a symbol of God's promises, you know? And so like just being out there and like the sun setting and, you know, like it just shows like God loves us, you know, and like he truly does care for us and he desires a relationship with us. And like just kind of being out in the water and like either at dawn or at sunset and just seeing the sky kind of like come alive, you know, like with those morning and evening colors, you know, like there's nothing like being out there when the sun's going down and the sun's coming up, you know, it's the coolest thing to me, you know? And like, I always really enjoy those late afternoon sessions, you know, when like you're out there and you're with your friends and you're trading waves and then you have a sunset and it's like, it just kind of puts a lot of things into perspective. You know, you're like, we're really blessed, you know, like there's a lot to be thankful for, you know, and there's a lot of things in this world that would give a lot of people reason to complain, you know, and be upset. But when you take a step back and it's like you're out there with your best friends and you're doing something you all love and then you get to see the sunset or the sun come up, you know, like there's nothing like it.
Yeah, I was talking to a guy the other day about that. One of our former guests, actually, Andy Blanks. You know, we're talking about this concept of common grace. You know, and being able to see those sunrises and those sunsets, and just the beauty that is for seemingly no other reason than just for it being beautiful, and feeling like that is just kind of a unnecessary goodness that God puts into this world. Man, to be able to stop and think about that, it's just, and to experience it, you know, waist deep in some type of water, whether it's in the ocean or on a river, or, I mean, those are just moments where you just realize that God does care for his people.
Yeah. And then like community is so huge within the church, you know, and like, and I'm a firm believer that we're not meant to do life alone, you know? And so to be able to do something like that, like either fishing with your friends on the river or surfing or whatever the case may be, you know, it's like, that's just another symbol. You know what I mean? It's like, man, like I'm doing something that I love with people that truly care about me, my well-being, care about my heart. You know, and like we're doing something that makes us smile ear to ear, you know, it's really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, I would imagine, I mean, I'm trying to imagine like what it would be like to ride, you know, a good size wave. You know, you can really feel, I've certainly felt the hydraulic power of the ocean and experienced that of like you can be utterly helpless, you know, when you're out there trying to swim against it or with it. You know, and I just think about, you know, as we walk with the Lord, You know, he is all powerful. And, you know, when we go against whatever he's doing, it really is like a waste of time. You know, it's like, trying to fight against the undertow. You know, it's, you're not going to win that battle. You're just not. And so it's like trying to find out what direction is the Lord going is going to be usually a little bit easier, you know. And I feel like metaphorically getting up on a big wave has to have that, like you said, a euphoria or an adrenaline rush. And when you get in line with where God is going and where God is moving and pushing, man, it has to be a similar feeling to tie those things together and go, this is what it feels like to be, in line with what God is doing and where he is going versus trying to go against him where nothing seems to be working out. This is just an utter struggle. You know, I think about that on a bike when I'm riding into a headwind. It's just relentless. And there's just no hope. You feel like you're going nowhere because you aren't going anywhere. You're making a little
nowhere headwind, fast, right?
Nowhere fast.
Nowhere fast.
But boy, you turn around, you get that tailwind. It's like, oh, there it is. There it is. You know,
and the ocean's the same way. You know, like when there's current running down the beach and it's choppy and it's like you can't. It's like you want little windshield wipers on your eyeballs because like there's just so much water splashing in your face. You know, it's like, dude, what are we doing out here? Like, let's go in. You know.
Yeah,
that's funny.
That's good. Well, you know it's coming. You know it's coming. Have you ever had a shark encounter on your surfboard?
If I'm being completely honest with you, my mindset with sharks is kind of out of sight, out of mind. I'm a firm believer that we're not meant to live in fear, you know? And if you're doing something like surfing that you thoroughly enjoy, but you're worried about potentially getting bit or eaten, like you're not going to be able to surf how you're meant to surf. Like, you're kind of supposed to like surf like kind of freely, you know, and like kind of working with what the waves are giving you. And if your mind is focused on something that may not even happen, you're not going to be able to do it effectively, you know. And so I don't think about it a whole lot here on the Gulf, especially. I didn't say,
did you think about it? I asked you, have you ever had an encounter?
I was getting there. Now, when I'm in California, I do think about it a little more because, everybody knows, like, great whites, like, they like that cold water. You know what I mean? And so I've never seen a shark. I think I saw one time years ago out here on the beach. I get Pensacola, but it was kind of small. But, like, out there one year I went. We were surfing at Oceanside Pier. And so we're out there. We're having fun. It's me, a guy from here, and the guy that we stay with. And so we're sitting out there. Like, we're all catching waves. It's not very crowded. Super fun size. And so, like, I look off and, like, just kind of taking it all in and see people doing this on the beach, like cars, whatever. And I see a boat, kind of just coming towards us. But it's way off in the distance. Not going fast or anything, you know. Like, no worries. So we just keep surfing, you know, like not really thinking a whole lot of anything other than just surfing, you know, and having fun with your friends and like, where are we going to get a burrito next, you know? And so as we're surfing, like this boat continues to come towards us, still at a very slow rate of speed, you know, like less than 5 miles per hour, like just almost like trolling. And so it eventually makes its way like kind of closer to us. And as it's doing that, like kind of coming closer, I catch a longer right. And so like, I kind of ride it almost all the way in. And so I walk down to the beach and then I walk back towards the pier to paddle out to kind of like get back in the position that I was wanting to be in. And so as I'm paddling out, there's a group of older guys and they're all bodyboarding. And so I come up by the pier and I kind of go around them so that I'm not in their way. And like, when you paddle around them, like you're in pretty close proximity, you know, and you can definitely hear what everybody's saying. And I heard one of the guys say, like, I guarantee you that Coast Guard boat was following a shark. And like that boat was like less than 100 yards from us towards the end of the pier. And so like, obviously I didn't see it, you know, and like, I didn't know it at the time, you know, like all I see is a red boat off in the distance kind of coming towards us, but they're not waving us down. They're not on a bullhorn telling us to get out of the water, like just business as usual, you know? And so that was one that sticks in my mind for sure. You know, and like then we were surfing. Did you know Ryan went with us one year to California? Ryan and Billy.
Yeah.
And so me and Ryan are surfing this one spot called Swami's, right? And so like you check it from this cliff and you look down and it breaks over rocks. It's so like it's this long right hander. And Ryan Parazine, like, I love the dude. He is notorious for saying something about sharks anytime we're in the water.
He can be a scaredy cat.
And so we're in the water, right? And so it's not crowded. Like, the wind's not very good. Like, there's waves, but nobody's, like, itching to get in the water, like locals. And so, but we're out there. We're from the Gulf. It's like, dude, we got to go, you know? Like, it's our last day. And so we're out there, and like I said, it's breaking over rocks. There's some kelp and stuff. And Ryan looks at me. He's like, this is kind of sharky, huh? And so I look at Ryan. I was like, I've never been mad at you like in my entire life, but
I wasn't even thinking about it.
Like, I want to hit you in the face right now. Like, why would you do that? You know? So every time I look down or like my leash touches me, I'm like all jumpy and stuff. Like, I don't even know if there's one out there, but like your mind plays tricks on you. You know what I mean? So like, but no, to answer your question, I've never been bumped. I've never been ran out of the water or anything. I mean, I've heard stories.
Sure. I know that, you know, it's probably one of the more common things, you know, when somebody thinks about surfing, it's like, oh, don't you worry about the sharks?
Well, you know, so my argument to that is, like, I think the chances of you getting hurt going to the beach or coming home from the beach are so much higher because of everybody that texts and drives. And if you're coming home, like, if you surf, like, say, summertime, for example, when the sun goes down lower, or later, and then like you throw in the factor of drinking and driving, you know, it's like your chances of getting smoked on the road are so much higher than getting bit by a shark, in my opinion.
Yeah, I got the opportunity to take a helicopter ride down the beach one time, and I saw just how many sharks that are out there, and there are. It's not like they're not out there, but it made me realize that what you're saying is correct. If they really wanted to get us, they would get us.
Yeah.
You know, because the ratio of sharks to people is definitely considerably different. And they're in between people. They're folks that are on, you know, rafts that are swimming out there, and they're absolutely oblivious to the presence of sharks, however big or small they may be. But you're right, man. I mean, you want to have a healthy respect. You want to be an idiot.
Yeah, for sure. It's but, like, if he's fishing, I'm not going to go paddle out right there.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah. Don't go near the chum.
Right. Fun fact, though, did you know that Puerto Rico has never had a recorded shark attack?
Oh, that is a fun fact.
I didn't know
that. So I went down there last January for a surf trip, and like we're just doing a little research on whatever, like where we're going to surf or whatever. And somehow that popped up. And so it's like, oh, like we can surf however long we want. Like,
that's a great stat. That's the best stat I've ever seen.
Yeah.
The odds are in my favor.
Yeah. So if you want to learn to surf and you're afraid of sharks, go down to Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico. Man, that's amazing. I love that. That is that's a good one. That's a good one.
Jacob, the one of the questions we like to ask our guests is, what's your next adventure?
Well, obviously, I'm going to California. I don't really plan too far ahead. Like all the managers, we only get certain times of the year off, you know, because, I mean, being here on the Gulf Coast, like, I mean, you guys know how touristy it can be, you know, and so spring break starts in a couple weeks, and then pretty much from March all the way through October, we're going to have a representative, like, every state come through.
Yeah.
The state lines, you know. Wow. And so, so we can only take extended time off from like the fall months, but you only have a short window there because once Black Friday hits, Black Friday through Christmas Eve will be slammed at Interlight. And so you kind of have a short window in September, October, and early November. And then after that, like January, February is your time to where you can take time off. And so I don't really plan too far ahead until I start getting closer to that, trying to figure out where I'm going to go, you know, take a trip. But, so yeah, I mean, I basically would say California.
That sounds awesome.
Sounds, gonna be great. Sounds like an adventure to me.
Yeah, and then I got some other places I'd like to get to one day, but like I don't have anything solid.
What's one of those places? One of your like this is the place that I really want to go surf one day. Once in my life.
I don't know if I want to surf it. I mean, I say I want to surf. Like you kind of have to at some point. But, like you got to go to North Shore and see like Pipeline do its thing. And like I would love to go there in the wintertime when it's just giant. And sit on the beach and just wipe drool off my chin, you know? Like, I can't fathom seeing the ocean do that, you know? And then seeing guys being able to, like, know exactly where to be at and what to do on a wave that's that powerful, knowing that there's a reef that's less than 3 feet, deep under you, you know? And, like they just, they're so dialed. You know, and I would just love to see that in person. So Hawaii is for sure on my list. Like I'm going to go one day. I don't know when, but I'm going.
That's awesome, man. And some of those, you know, I mean, there are lots of videos out there. Like I've seen where those guys are, they get pulled to these waves on like a jet ski or something.
Yeah.
You know,
they have one of those in Puerto Rico and it's insane. Like we paddled out there and like knowing that it was a tow-in spot and it was like, it was so big. It's one of the biggest sets I've ever seen. I'm like straight at us. I was like, I'm going to die out here. Like it was so big. And just knowing that that was like child's play. Like they weren't even doing tow-ins there.
Wow.
And knowing that it can get like 20 foot and they're just going for it.
No shark attacks, but the way it's shaking for you.
There you go.
We've had some drownings.
There you go.
Is there, on a serious note, has there ever been like a really scary moment where you did get like pressed by a wave and it really scared you?
Being held down is a very, very weird feeling. So like it's, I think it feels like when you're underwater longer than what it truly is. But surfing's so different, you know, like it's not like basketball or football or whatever, you know, like our playing surface is always moving. And at some point you're not going to breathe normally because you're going to be underwater.
Right.
And so like, if you were to go hold your breath for however long, you can prepare for that. You can get a couple deep breaths and stuff. But like when you're surfing, you know, like it's not like an all out sprint, like basketball or football where your heart rate's constantly elevated and you're having to like kind of catch your breath from time to time. So you do get a couple breaks, but there's not, it doesn't always work out to where you can take a good deep breath before you go underwater. And so that's when it can get scary, you know, like you haven't taken a deep breath and you're getting ragdolled underwater and then you're coming up and you're like, dude, I should be hitting the surface by now. And you haven't. You know, like that's when it can get a little nerve wracking for sure. And like hurricane swells can always be weird, you know, like that can really like just feeling the power that can come through there when you're not used to it, you know? And like, I felt that in Puerto Rico, like that's like poor man's Hawaii down there. It's just surrounded by the ocean. So you can get swell year round, you know, and just feeling open ocean come down on you, you know, like it's just like, so yeah, like I've been very shook up out there. Like it doesn't take a whole lot when you're in a place that you're unfamiliar with. And like it's big time surf coming in, you know, like it's a very humbling feeling. And like it almost makes you want to work hard to like kind of be prepared for that too, in a way, you know, like kind of put the time in to surf as much as you can leading up to a trip so that you know that you're in surf shape, you know. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it gives me a little anxiety.
I know. Every time I see somebody, every time I see somebody go underwater on a movie, I try to hold my breath to see if I could make it like to the next scene, like when they come up for air. And I'm sitting here just like my heart's racing, thinking of getting held down by a wave.
Yeah, it's weird. Like you'll fall and like you just like you're doing all these flips and stuff, and like you're just then you got to come up, and like as you're swimming, you're like, I hope there's not another wave that's about to come down on top of that one, you know, because that's when it really gets dangerous, is when you get held down by more than one wave consecutively. And then you're having to like stay calm under water, obviously, and then hope that you come up to not another wave coming down. You know, like you hear about those stories all the like in Hawaii, and like when they're surfing serious, like heavy duty waves where like they'll talk about like 3-wave hold downs and something insane. And it's just like, dude, no, thank you. Mm.
You ever had a moment where you're like, I think I'm going to go to the beach for a little while. I think I'm going to go sit. I'm going to sit.
Yeah, it happened the other day.
That umbrella's looking pretty nice.
Like we had some swell come in. It was a couple weeks ago. Like it got so big, like out of nowhere. And it was 3 of us out of the pier, or 4 of us. And like our sandbar had shifted some. And so like at Christmas time, we had a really good swell. Like it was big, but it was kind of like just a little soft, like kind of roll in almost, like real easy drop. But once we had all that cold weather come in, all the north wind shifted the sand like out. And so that outside sandbar got shallower than what it was prior to that. And so that means like when the wave comes in, it stands up so much quicker. And so like it's more of like a vertical takeoff, like you're kind of coming down like straight instead of like a... Do y'all get what I mean when like you roll in? Like you're kind of just... Yeah. So like it would kind of be like that.
Yep.
Instead of like vertical. And like I was looking at something like, dude, I'm going to like get smoked out here. And like it was kind of like big and unruly, you know, like there was some big sets. Like we were at the very end of the pier and I was so shook up. Like at first, like I got pounded when I paddled out and like somebody said that that was the biggest set of the day that they'd seen. And I took it straight on the head. It was like 4 waves. And so I think I was just kind of like in my head. At that point, like I went in, I was like, man, I'm a liability out here. Like I can't even relax. So like, yeah, I went in for sure.
Yeah, tapping out. Yeah.
Well, you got to know your limits.
Got to know your limits. I suppose it's like riding a horse though. You know, you fall off, you gotta get back on, huh?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but in a sense, like you gotta be smart too. You know what I mean? Like know your limits, but you can't always like, you gotta push the envelope at some point too. Like, I mean, that's progression, you know, in a sport. You can't be afraid to try. So it's a really fine line to walk.
That's fair. Sure. Man, I really think there's so much curiosity. I think we could probably talk all evening.
I could have 100 more questions. I mean, yeah. This is such a world that I'm not familiar with.
Absolutely.
Go for it whenever you want.
It's really, really cool conversation. I really appreciate you taking time to sit down with us, share a little bit, give people a little test, a little taste of what it is to be a surfer and surfing, and maybe somebody wants to get into it, which would be really cool.
Yeah.
And for Interlight, for the shop, do you guys have an online store, or is there anything like that people can support? You know, where can they find you if they're coming to, if you come down to Pensacola Beach or down to Destin, you know, we can put all that in the show notes. Just, you know, however we can support you, let us know how we can do that. We'll put that in the show notes.
That would mean so much for y'all to do that. I mean, like I said, working for a small business is so great. And like, I'm really fortunate to be in the position that I am within small business, but it's such a battle with online shopping and Amazon, you know, like,
sure.
Like it's almost like the deck's just stacked against you, you know, but I think we do a really great job building relationships with customers. I think that's why Interlight has stood 50 years, you know, and we've been around as long as we have, because we pride ourselves on not just like, hey, we want to sell you the most expensive board in the shop or board shorts or whatever the case may be. Like, let's get to know you, you know, and then like build that relationship from there. And so like that, I really appreciate you guys wanting to do that, but we do have an online store. It's just interlightsurf.com. InnerlightSurf.com. It does have just a lot of our shop t-shirts on there, like shop logos and stuff, but it is a third party. And so if you were to look on there and you see a certain logo in a certain color and you call the shop looking for it, or you ordered it and you come in to the shop wanting a different size for an exchange or something, we probably don't have it because it did come from a third party. We might have something similar, but we do have lots to choose from. And so I would just say to keep that in mind if you do shop online. Yeah. But we do have shops in Pensacola. We do have one in the downtown area on Palafox. I know a lot of tourists do come through there. And there's always something to do downtown. You know, the Wahoos are there, restaurants are there, coffee shops, like you name it can be found down there. And then Gulf Breeze is right next to Pensacola Beach. So more times than not, people coming from out of town would have to drive through Gulf Breeze to get to Pensacola Beach. And so they would drive right by the shop to see that. And then our store in Destin, if you guys have been to the Destin Commons, we are actually right over there now. We were down on Highway 98 for several years, but we were able to get into the Destin Commons a few years back. Nice. And so been in there ever since.
Cool. So, man, I mean, if our listeners are listening, they're vacationing down there this summer, I hope they can come by and support the shop.
Yeah, it would mean a lot.
Or maybe, maybe we can put, the surf camp's pretty cool. Maybe we can put you can send me the dates for surf camp. You know, if that's something somebody's really interested in, we can also put that on the show notes for people to, maybe they want to do a vacation down there for surf camp, which would be cool if you always wanted to learn how to surf, right?
Yeah, we have so many out-of-towners come through every summer. Last year we did 10 weeks of camp. It's a three-day camp, and so I would say it's more out-of-towners than locals, or even maybe split half and half. We haven't released dates yet, but you would sign up on that same website. If you were to go shop, you would do the same website to do surf camp. We are going to release those the end of this month. One of the ladies I mentioned earlier, our operations manager, she's going down to Costa Rica with her family for her week vacation, and so she wants to have prime internet connection before she releases those dates.
Understood.
When she comes back, it'll be doors wide open. So. Cool.
Well, great. Well, just give me a little heads up on that. We'll make sure that makes it into
I appreciate that.
Into the notes, you bet. Man, what a great conversation. Really, I love, when we made this podcast and decided we wanted to do it, we wanted to keep it real broad. And if it happens outdoors, it's fair game. And so, man, it's really great to have someone from the surfing community, especially I live down here on the Gulf Coast. Brian lives up in Birmingham, so he's not catching too many waves up there in Birmingham, but down here in Mobile and Gulf Shores and Pensacola, there's a lot of folks that might want to take you up on that. So, man, what a great conversation. And I love the idea of the humility that it brings. Man, we all need that. And, man, what a great way to learn that and a great activity, honestly, man. I mean, it just keeps you in shape. And it's a really cool sport. So, man, I really appreciate you sharing about, the things you've learned and sharing your story with us. We hope this conversation challenges people and encourages people to write their own stories and share their own adventures in the place we love to call the storied outdoors.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Like it's been really cool, something to look forward to for sure. And you guys are doing great. You know, I think it's good that y'all are kind of trying to channel that outlet. You know, it's y'all seem a little more unique and in certain areas than others, and so I think y'all are doing a great job. And I'm stoked to be on here.
Thanks a lot, man.
Redbeard's Outfitter is a Mobile, Alabama-based outfitter offering a carefully curated selection of gear and apparel, outfitting you for your next adventure, exploring our world, and building community. We love this local store, and we love supporting folks like them who are building community in the outdoor space. Plus, they have some spectacular apparel for Alabamians and all the gear anyone would need to be ready to enjoy the outdoors. Use promo code TSO for a 20% discount online or visit them in store. Visit redbeardsoutfitter.com for more information.